Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning. It's Friday, the 11th of September, and it's the last working day of the week. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet. Coming up in our bulletin tonight, corruption in Ghana's judiciary. 22 judges are suspended.
Almost 10% of the judges of the lower court, high court and below, on camera, in their offices, in their homes, by the street side, parking lots of malls, receiving money. That's a massive sample size. And it tells us that this problem is deep.
Hopeless situation for migrants. Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan calls for international commitment to solve the problem.
I think these are desperate people who live in war zones, who are running away to protect themselves and their families.
All that and more coming up shortly.
Top story.
Ghana's judiciary has come under serious scrutiny. The work of a renowned investigative journalist implicates several judges in corruption scandals. Over 30 judges were caught on video and audio recording, taking bribes and settling cases in favor of others. Ghana's President John Dramani Mahama directed the head of the judiciary to suspend those involved. As investigations continue, 22 judges have already been suspended. From Accra, Isaac Kalechi reports that the judiciary now faces a major task of restoring confidence among Ghanaians.
The news of high-profile judges being caught on tape receiving bribes has sent shockwaves in Ghana. 12 of the judges are from superior courts, while 22 of them sit in the lower courts. They were caught on video and audio recordings taking bribes for cases they were settling, on which some were high-profile in nature. Upon receiving bribes, the unscrupulous judges freed criminals. Investigative journalist Anas Arima Yawanas, who carried out this work, spent 2 years roaming all the courts across the country. The man behind the expose says he is into the business of naming, shaming, and jailing the bad guys in the Ghanaian society.
My journalism is hinged on three principles: naming, shaming, and jailing. So when I put this evidence together, I go to the court of law and I testify before the courts, and the bad guys are jailed. I must say I don't do this work alone. I do it with a team. That makes the work possible and good.
But Anas is also willing to take the risk that comes with this type of job for his country.
I do what I do because it rids corruption of the society and make the society a better place. It makes your private life a bit boring because you cannot do what other people do. You can't go out and mingle as other people do because of the security implications. My kind of journalism is very risky.
S. Ankuma is senior private legal practitioner in Ghana and says the revelations are extremely worrying.
The surprise in this is that this gentleman was able to get that number of judges, almost 10% of the judges of the lower court, high court and below, on camera, in their offices, in their homes, by the street side, parking lots of malls, receiving money. That's a massive sample size. And it tells us that this problem is deep, and we need to do something about the system. If we don't fix the system, this is going to happen. This is going to continue.
Justice Poku Echampong speaks for the Chief Justice and talks about what his boss is doing.
We've indicated that with the Superior Court judges, there's a process that must be followed, that must be complied with in accordance with the Constitution, Article 1463. The President referred the petition to the Honorable Lady Chief Justice and asked her to comply with the dictates of the Constitution. And the requirement is that the Honorable Lady Chief Justice should establish a prima facie case against each of the judges. And that process has started.
The identities of the 12 judges implicated in corrupt acts are being revealed. Some of them have taken ill, while others contemplate suicide to the magnitude of the expose. But Ghanaians have no sympathy for them and want them punished as they express lack of confidence in the judiciary. A major premiering is to take place in the coming weeks so Ghanaians can watch publicly videos of the scandal.
Isaac Kalechi in Ghana. And to follow up on the developments of the corruption scandal in Ghana, DW's Teresa Krininger spoke to Isaac Owusu of Konrad Adenauer Foundation.
The issue of the judges that have come up is not the first time that the public has had questions about the judgments passed by the judiciary. There have been a number of instances whereby the Ghanaian society really questioned type of judgment that is given over a period of time. Now, what has happened is that there are a lot of public prosecution of the judges because they thought that judges are supposed to be impartial, they are supposed to be fair, and they are supposed to be adjudicating justice in favor of the innocent and in favor of people who really demand justice.
It has been so far difficult to provide hard evidence. Do you see now a major breakthrough?
Yes, as a major breakthrough, because you see, some of us from the civil society are very happy because there have also been several instances of scandals that ends up in court and they are set free. All these scandals came out, there were a lot of public outcry, but it ended up in the judiciary and the people were not really prosecuted as in the public light we expected. So we think that now that we have this evidence, it's a major breakthrough for all other scandals that will come up at the end of the day.
Why has it taken the government so long to react after this undercover investigation?
Now, what really happened was when the government received it, they sent the information, they also gave the information to the judiciary. And the judiciary have also done their own basic investigation. And this has to do with reputation of people, the job of people, and of course the reputation of the judiciary itself. So it is important that some basic checks are done, even though they are found on video, before the final information is revealed to the public. So I think that is not too long a time because 3 weeks is really short. Don't forget that in Ghana, we have cases that have gone beyond 40 years and more.
And the judiciary is very important for every country. And let's say the Ghanaian judiciary is corrupt at this level. What does this tell us about the governance of the country?
Fine. Let me be very emphatic to say that it will not be 100% correct to put the entire judiciary into that perspective. I think that some members of the judiciary are corrupt, no question about that, and that evidence has been brought up for all of us to see. I think we still have some credible, genuine people in the judiciary, especially the ladies, who are very upright and who are incorruptible, more or less. And I think that in view of that, we can say that we still have some hope at the end of the day.
Ghana was for many years known as an African democratic model nation. Do you think this scandal now affects badly that perception?
Democracy is much, 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 much bigger than the judiciary, even though it is one of the building blocks. But I think that for as far as democracy is of development is concerned in this country, I think we are still making huge progress.
Teresa Kreninger was speaking to Isaac Owusu of Konrad Adenauer Stiftung.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
The former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan has described the current migrant situation as hopeless. He called for international commitment to end the desperation and war that have caused the problem. But above all, he appealed for legal pathways for migrants. Annan was one of the key speakers during the Africa Beyond Forum in Berlin. This is an annual gathering that brings together authorities in Africa and Europe to debate the performance of African economies and the challenges ahead. DW's Yulia Han thought his opinion on the ongoing migrant crisis.
I think these are desperate people who live in war zones, who are running away to protect themselves and their families. It is the sort of situation we've seen time and time again in war zones where people really take off and try to find safer grounds to protect themselves and their families. And that is what is happening. When you look at what is happening in Syria today, it's not a place any of us would want to bring up a family or even will have the possibility of bringing up a family. So they are leaving to be able to protect themselves, and we have an obligation on the international humanitarian law and our own moral values to help.
But people are not only fleeing conflict zones. Thousands, 10,000s of Africans are also leaving the country. What can, what must Africa itself do to keep these mostly young people on the continent to offer them a better future?
We need to create situations at home in Africa and in other places where the young men and women can have a meaningful life at home. If they can have meaningful life at home, they will not find any inducement to jump on a ship, take great risks to go and look for better prospects. So we need to work together with the African countries to improve economic development. We also need to make sure that when it comes to migration and asylum seeking, we get out the message that there's a legal pathway to get it and make information available, possibly closer to where the refugee flows are coming from, to let them know where to get information, what the options are for acceptance are before they even take off. And this will require cooperation between European countries and the African countries and some of the countries sending off the refugees.
Within Europe, Germany has taken the lead in this current refugee situation, and it has received criticism and praise at the same time. How do you see Germany's role?
I'm one of those who are praising Germany. I think they have demonstrated compassion, solidarity, and respect for sanctity of life. And I was very pleased to see the role the German government has played and the way the public welcomed some of the refugees. I think this should be seen as an unusual and phenomenal event, which I hope is not going to go on forever. But if we take the right steps, setting up the centers, getting information out, doing the screening where it should, rather than waiting for them to come up here, I think we'll be able to deal with it. But I'm very proud of countries like Germany, Sweden, which have accepted so many refugees. It is them today. It could have been me, it could have been you. And we've seen it in the world. We have to have that compassion and solidarity.
Yulia Yan speaking to former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan.
Human rights.
Sierra Leone civil war ended over a decade ago. However, the aftermath of the 11-year conflict is still fresh in the minds of the many Sierra Leoneans. The war claimed over 50,000 lives and caused a lot of misery. Many families were separated from each other. Some of them have not been able to unite with their loved ones. Naminatu Jumisa is one of such victims. 17 years ago, she lost track of her daughter. As destiny would have it, she claims to have found her. But the claimed girl is under the custody of another family that claims that her parents passed on. The solution to this is a DNA test, but the victims cannot afford it. As Mutala Kamara reports, responsible authorities are equally challenged.
This child dispute between the Jumisa and Takama family has aroused interest from the public. Madam Aminata Jumisa claims she is the biological mother to Sia Jumisa, whom she was separated from the country's civil war. She is in possession of a birth certificate of a child named Sia Jumisa and a photograph she claims is her daughter, and she was at a tender age.
We became a name Geneva Sia Jumisa.
The name of my daughter is Geneva Sia Jumisa. I last saw her when she was 3 years old in 1997. During the attack on Kono, Koidu town, my mother was taking care of a girl who carried my daughter on her back, and they all escaped. Later, there was an announcement that the Ecomog forces had liberated the town, which was a lie. So when they were returning, they ran into an ambush and everyone went separate ways. The 12-year-old girl who was carrying my daughter on her back said the child was crying for water, so she decided to leave her in the bush and ran away.
Say one thing, I just been 9 seconds.
However, Mr. Sam Richard Takama, who is the present custodian of the child, has a different explanation. He said the child that Madam Jumisa is referring to as her biological daughter is their daughter, and her name is Hawa.
I was at the school. I was served a letter from the Ministry of Social Welfare saying that I want to run away with somebody's daughter. I was really mad. I was not happy about it. So I took my wife and a child, and we went to social welfare. And I explained to them that this child is not my biological child. I have adopted her. I want to help her in life. I have found out that she has gone all over this area, that her daughter, who was missing for over 18 years, has been found.
But Madam Jumisa said she is quite sure that this child is her long-lost biological daughter. And she tells us of the time she met her child after more than 17 years.
He said, but one day, God will make it so I sit down front to me.
So one day I was sitting in front of my house and I saw a girl who was selling second-hand clothes. Someone called her and eventually we made eye contact with each other. I felt a sharp pain in my stomach. I helped her with the clothes and gave her cold water to drink, and then I started asking her questions.
Madam Jumisa said that she went to visit the Takama family, and during the first visit, the family accepted that the girl is not their biological daughter, and even asked her to produce any proof that she is the biological mother. She said that initially they were very receptive, but have now shown an indication that they are not ready to give up her daughter. The Ministry of Social Welfare, Gender and Children's Affairs are presently handling the issue. Bashiru Thula, Social Services Officer, explained to us so far their findings. Bashiru said that the only way that they will decide who the biological mother of this child is through a DNA test. The ministry has requested for Madam Jumisa, who is the complainant and the alleged biological mother to this child, to pay an amount of 4 million leones, approximately $800, for the DNA test to be done.
Even though we can't handle it as a ministry, but it's a social issue and we must intervene. Of course, we called the respondent, the people that are with this child, and we commenced our investigation. And it was very, very interesting because the circumstance she gave, and we shall see, she had a case, and that prompted us to do the investigation.
Madam Jumisa said she can't afford the money for the DNA test and is asking the government, the NGOs, and everyone else to assist her.
A very touching story indeed, presented by Mutala Kamara in Sierra Leone. On 25 September, 193 world leaders under the auspices of United Nations will launch a set of 17 global goals for sustainable development. The aim is to end extreme poverty, fight inequality and injustice, and to fix climate change in the next 15 years. One man thinks this is possible if they are popularized. This man is Richard Coates. He is the brain behind Project Everyone and Radio Everyone. I spoke to him about his ideas and the projects.
Well, you have to actually go back in history a tiny bit. In the year 2000, the UN issued some goals, which were called the Millennium Development Goals. But these goals weren't particularly famous. They certainly weren't advertised when they came out. Most people don't know about them. So we've got some new goals coming up. And I thought, you know, coming from the movie business, we should try and have a huge opening weekend. We should try and make them famous like Avengers Assemble or 50 Shades of Grey. And I thought if everybody actually knows what these promises are and therefore can say to their governments in every country, have you kept the promises? How are you doing? We expect you to do these things. You can't break a promise. That it would actually make a huge difference because knowledge is power.
There have been similar efforts such as Ban Aid, which have not necessarily been successful or perhaps have received negative criticism. How different is Project Everyone?
The great difference about these goals is they are meant to be for everyone everywhere. I think that there's a real curve of history going on here. And there used to be a feeling that it was just the responsibility of the West in a slightly imperialistic way to give more money to the South, and the South should spend the money as the West wanted them to, you know, like that. I think it is a new beginning, and it's a beginning where I think people in every country should be aware of the goals and fight within their country for their governments, as well as international institutions.
Tell me a little bit more about the song that is to be officially released tomorrow.
This is an amazing thing. I mean, it's a song called Tell Everybody, by a really interesting group of artists from, you know, South Africa, Nigeria, Tanzania, all over Africa, done by three producers from three different countries. And not only is it, I could actually sing it to you, it's actually a really good song.
Sure, why not? I'm very excited, looking forward and eager to hear you sing that.
Tell you, tell me, that's as much as I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Tell everybody. But the great thing about it is it's also crowdsourced. What they did is they actually went out to people in lots of countries through radio stations saying, what would you like the song to be about? These are the goals. What makes you most passionate? And actually, they got thousands of submissions. And some of the lyrics of the song are, in fact, one of them is bits in French, bits in English, actually written by young people.
I love your idea, Richard, I must say, and I'm inspired that you find it right, that information is very important. But just how optimistic are you that your project will actually be successful?
I am not optimistic that we will reach all 7 billion people in the world, I have to admit. I think we'd be very lucky to do that. But I really am optimistic that we will reach billions of people, particularly if you guys work hard on it. And I think, you know, we've got great things online, partnerships with YouTube and Google. We've got an ad in every cinema in 35 countries. We've got schools in 100 countries teaching their kids. We've got a TV show. We've got radio, everyone. So I'm optimistic that an infinite number of more people will know about these goals than ever knew about the MDGs.
Richard Kurtz of Project Everyone. We will play you some of his music before we end the show.
Your say.
Now, let's join Abubakar Ajelo and Sandra Oparaji for your opinion.
Hi, let's begin with a few responses on the report about teachers' strike in Kenya.
We've been reporting that Kenyan teachers have been pushing their government to comply with a pay increase ordered by the Supreme Court. But the government says there is no money to pay the teachers. Wow. Because it was not included in the country's budget presented to Parliament in June this year.
That's right. Our regular contributor, Usman Afan in Nigeria, said, I don't understand why African nations ignore the necessary needs of their teachers in primary and secondary schools. This always affects the lives of poor people. Rasmanko in Tanzania wrote, we are all taught by teachers. Even geniuses get their basic knowledge from teachers. So those Kenyan teachers deserve a better pay. And Ali Muhammad said, the problem of teachers not getting better salary is not only a Kenyan issue, but rather a major problem that is affecting the entire African continent. A teacher whose duty is to provide sound education, moral attitude, respect, and good background for our future leaders should be given their due salary. What do you think about that?
Boy, seriously, I agree with that. I'm from Nigeria, and it's a big problem. Teachers get meager salaries. Man, these teachers, they're the ones that taught the doctors. They're the ones that taught the professionals. Yeah. So, yeah. Man, they deserve better.
Definitely. Yeah. Quite a sad issue.
And now to another matter. Joel Hezekiah, our oldest listener, who has been following us since 1965. Wow. Wrote us a letter with several issues.
I do remember reading a series of letters from Joel, and it's been actually a real pleasure being in contact with him, sharing our correspondence almost on a daily basis.
Well, he wrote about several issues, including the fact that he's getting very old and tired, and therefore finding it hard to respond to all the issues aired on African Link. But one key issue he mentioned is the massive flow of refugees from Syria and Iraq.
Interesting, actually, but that's not an issue we usually cover on Africa Link, is it?
Yes, we did, but our colleagues on the Inside Europe desk have been reporting on it for days now, Abu.
That's true. But what did Joel have to say about this Syrian refugee crisis?
Well, he commends Germany for accepting migrants and refugees from the Syrian crisis. He said Germany even ignored the fact that terrorist groups might even infiltrate the groups that have been arriving in Europe. That's all from me.
And from me as well.
That was Abubakar Ajelo and Sandra Oparaji presenting some of your comments. And now, a reminder of our main stories. Corruption in Ghana's judiciary, 22 judges are suspended. Hopeless situation for migrants, former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan calls for international commitment to solve the problem. Remember, we welcome your feedback on this program. Do send us your comment via text message to 49160-957-59510 in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or do send us a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Let us now start the weekend with some of the musical beats from Project Everyone. From me, Jen Ayeko Kumet, enjoy the rest of your weekend.